Blog Talk Radio.
Wonder what it would be like if I had a more elaborate array of electronics to produce this show, and I've thought about it at different times, but I can't get over something that my brother once said to me when I was talking to him about production and sound and such things, and he said he's a smart man. He said, you know, if you don't have anything to say, it doesn't matter how dressed up it is. Nobody's going to pay any attention. It's the message. Yeah. Brilliant. I love my brother. Anyway, hello and welcome to Masonic Effects. How many years? We're getting into our 13th year. 13 years of this. Yeah, that's pretty decent. I'm kind of pleased with that, you can imagine. And we try and keep this format lively, and in the background over those years as a Freemason, it's been a challenge at times to carry on, to be part of the conversation. It's happening. Originally I was like many people, you know, taught to keep my blinders on and just focus on what's right in front of me, and that piece would be handed to me. And then I began to read and realize things. The reading was realizing that Masonry is global. More than that, it's universal. It's conceptual, and it was still brunt, going to the lodge for brunch and catching a conversation and my favorite brew with friends after. Eventually, you begin to realize that there's such a clamor about what it is that we seem to have a hard time focusing on just doing it, just being it. So, particularly when we have our own version of oligarchy, or is it autocracy? Yeah. We have some loose translations of our democratic order, that really don't serve us well. And where I am, we've in fact injected this sense that if you are carrying some degree of rank, you ought to know. And it, and in order to declare that, to affirm that, men of all capacities simply start making their proclamations as if they know what they're talking about. And it's not that we can, we'll ever stop that, but it is interesting that we've given so much credence to people that are not they're really guessing that they have something useful that we would want to hear, and guessing that we would be willing to absorb all of that. Now, in our community, we know that there are a lot of beautiful men that will accept that at face value, and question. And I feel almost protective of those fellows in a way. It's beautiful as long as you can, you know, have a world ordered for you, you know, give, and you can feel a stronger sense of purpose. I think that's wonderful, particularly for a fellow that's not in other aspects of his life, is not having that, is not they're sitting down and having those, you know, abstract conversations with anyone. That's not to say he can't. He doesn't have the ability. It's opportunity, isn't it? And then you meet these beautiful, beautiful Masons who are so content. It's like for me, in my mind, it's more the Zen element of Masonry. We apply these philosophies. There's a whole range of philosophy. You apply their philosophy that is most uplifting to you, the most expansive, most that creates the most connectivity with the world around them, the most. Now, treating people. Now, people do really stupid things all the time, but treating people as if they're stupid is wrong. It's simply wrong, and now I find it kind of remarkable. We found a new language for old ideas. It's all media contrivances, like a woke culture, particularly, and a cancel culture. These kind of things are fascinating. It's like from the floor of the lecture hall, the general public has picked up an idea and just used it and abused it the way we normally do, for their own purposes. We can't have anything unpleasant happen to us anymore. It's now post-traumatic stress disorder. Well, it isn't, but it is. We seem to have a fascination creating our own reality these days, and if I say something is my truth, then I can impose that on you, the world around. Except this whole phase is losing its appeal very, very fast, as it always does. Superstitiously answers, you know, a belief. We're reverting back to belief instead of fact, belief instead of science. You don't have to prove belief. You just have to say it. And that's become quite powerful in some parts of the world, hasn't it? The interesting thing is that for a while, the facts and science will be pushed aside, but it doesn't disappear. It isn't crushed. It's like it's an energy, and the energy doesn't dissipate. It just moves to different. It moves. I shouldn't say just. It moves to different forms, and this energy is doing exactly that. The joy of living a life as a Mason. Why would I want to remind the world of that? That's our commentary for today. But I'm in I think I'm in using that. I think that's a reflection of this feeling of nostalgia that's come over me after the Christmas, after the holidays and in the beginning of the new year, the Georgian calendar. And to all those using the Julian calendar, have a Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas to you and your families. It's all very humbling, isn't it? When I find when I become very nostalgic, there are things that I just love that feel so comfortable. And even if I know the truth, that I find, you know, that those illusions of safety. I mean, I think about, you know, the fantasy world where, you know, actually I live in a culture where we can tell all of the little people or little kids around us that there is a Santa, and that there is magic in the world. I know some cults and belief systems are dead set against this, and that's fine. How it's developed that this has become popular and set at a point of happiness for little kids is a cultural artifact. And if you don't have that in your background, well, you just don't have that. That's okay. That's okay. That there is magic in the world, well, that's a conversation we're going to have to get into in Masonic Effects. There's no question about it. It's controversial, isn't it? It's as controversial today as some of the abuses of major thinkers, the Noam Chomsky's, the Jordan Peterson's, the people that are making us sit up and pay attention. We can now subject them to unrelenting vitriol, and we have all kinds of mechanics. I can even use AI right now to teach me how to deface you, how to ruin your reputation, how to manipulate your reputation for no other reason than it can be done. This is how we are entering many of us are entering the global community, not by the front door into open arms, like, where have you been? This is great. But in the back door, this is where suspicion and cynicism has taken root. For men who have never felt safe in the company of others, there's nothing that we can, not very little that we can do other than continue to display this joie de vivre, this sense of camaraderie that comes out intelligent conversations, thoughtful conversations. It's been going on, and we're part of that continuity, which is interesting. But along the way, don't you find that you meet the most interesting fellows? And as it's a moment of great pleasure to look around the world at the progress of Masonry, the development of Masonry, and realize that it's going on so many levels at the same time. And that we can, and that if we search long enough, we find one that is compatible with our own thinking. In the meantime, it brings us to this awareness that of the diversity around us. Yes, we are taught about similarities. Well, you know, you don't have to pay any attention to this. You never have to believe any of it. And it really doesn't matter. Facts are facts, whether it's like somebody saying, I don't believe in democracy. Well, really? I have a hell of a time getting my head around that. It is what it is. Whether I don't believe in climate change. Well, it doesn't really matter, does it? It's like believing in the Pythagorean theorem. Does it make any difference to the facts whether I believe it or not? Interesting, eh? Does it matter if I am aware and informed about the dangers and risks of what I'm doing in the long run? Well, no, I can still get a full tank of fuel in my car, and I can let it idle in coolish weather or any kind of weather, keep the air conditioning on or keep the heater on. And not give a fig about contributing to greenhouse gases, except, you know, if I learn how to make sacrifice, start off with small inconveniences and prepare ourselves for the major things that are coming. We need to be able to believe that we're making a difference. And that we can tell ourselves that it's not surrender, it's survival. Oh, those are edgy words, and we won't get into too much of that today. No, we don't want to have too much of an energized kind of a conversation around here. We were here to have fun and to relax and to make the best of our time together. Masonry is interesting, isn't it? When you think about all that's happening around the world, you think we're digging a hole for ourselves to jump into, or do you think that we're on an island where, you know, we're at least we're not perfect, but at least we're trying to sort out what's going on around us and to be accountable. The world seems to want to pull us in a whole bunch of different directions. It's fun. Don't really care about that. It's just fun. Life is a lark. Well, that's the kind of statement and thinking that comes from a land of plenty, and not from the world around us, where, you know, there is an ugliness. The hunger and poverty is ugly. And we know better. We know we have the answers. It's just being able to act on them. Mm-hmm. So do we hold out that constant faith that mankind will come together and do the so-called right thing? Or do we sink into the cynicism of old age? Mm-hmm. I think cynicism, being a bit cynical, is very important. We should always be a bit skeptical. It's always important to examine, to have some proofs. It's very, very helpful. As much as reaching a point in relationships with other people where trust occurs, and that is just an exceptional kind of a feeling, isn't it? Experience. And it happens in the most unusual and unexpected ways. Speaking of unusual and unexpected, I have my favorite brewed coffee with me, and I've had this urge to sit back and enjoy the program with you. Yes, we have the poetry today. Percy Shelley's Ode to the West Wind. Will there come a time when something like that matters? Usually when we're sensing that we're going to be robbed of, or we don't no longer have access, then all those things matter tremendously. When the old man rises from his chair, finds it's a struggle, watches a young man doing exactly the same thing effortlessly, and realizes that's about aging, eh? That's about aging and coming to terms, and wanting to instill this sense of well-being and on that younger version of himself. Well, fortunately, We figured it out. We've found our way to the doorstep of a lodge, and somebody has taken us in. If you're, the whole program today is based on courage. I want you to have that as a theme. The courage of the poet. Where is the battle? It's within yourself. It's like going on a golf course. You talk to a golfer, and you know that they're controlling focus. It's the within. They're controlling focus and relaxing and piecing it all together. And they know when they get in the zone, it's just very, very beautiful. This is what I'd like you to keep in mind today, if I can impose a bit of that through the music and through the narrative and through the commentary and the poetry. We can just, do a rough cut and think good, bad, thumbs up, thumbs down. Okay. Or we can look at what to learn. And why people have been leaning into these conversations for hundreds and hundreds of years, longer than that. And then one day I want to talk to you about why we've called poetry rap. What's wrong with the poets and poetry? Is this just a cultural nihilism? We can't, as long as we call it rap, it's really not serious. Well, there's some beautiful, beautiful things happening right now. It's speaking of which, come with me and enter this temporary dream state. Just suspend disbelief just for a little while. And let's see what we can get up to as Masons. Around the world, thank you for tuning in. We have listeners from clandestine areas, and you wouldn't ought to think would be basins of masonry. But our Latvian friends are loyal. Thank you. Just love you. And New Zealand envious, summertime. Put down that bit of steak and sit back here and pour yourself a good one and let's connect. Let's talk. Africa, we know Africa is coming on. It's like the continent of the future with a huge, huge and tremendous future. So, of course, the developers will be controversial. The politics will be controversial, just as it always is, But look at what's happening with these huge populations grow and cities and urbanization and wow, the logistics of the just fabulous. So a lot happening there, and Masonic Effects has a footprint there, up the centrally and in the south and up the east coast. Thank you. Do I begin to explain? I think it's the wonder of masonry that has you tuning in. North America, fine. We'll just admit that we are curious and we have a capacity and we like it for whatever reason. We like it. Europe and Britain, well, of course, it's always a pleasure when you darken our door. The Mideast. In Asia, do we have I don't think we have listeners out of Philippines or Indonesia. No, not ordinarily, or India for that matter, but lots of reasons for that. Just a matter of time before we sink up with our brethren in those countries. Here, before we get there, sync up with this. This is pretty ethereal. Thank you. blues. That'll do. That'll do. The joy of living a life as a Freemason. Now, how do we grow? There's lots of things I don't understand. How do we grow if we don't try new things? How do we grow like that? I had a friend that went to went to one of the most famous seafood restaurants around. It was just lovely, lovely, exquisite. I can still remember. And she sat down and ordered a steak. And it was because she didn't recognize, as she said, she didn't recognize anything on the menu and didn't want to ruin her night. So this is a tribute to that kind of thinking, a homage to that kind of thinking that what I know is all there is, and I can't be happy with anything else, especially a new taste, a new scent, a new flavor, a new activity. So this is just a question to you. How do we grow if we don't try new things? Not you, of course. You're perfect in every way. Or no, that's me. But how do we? Seriously. If your answer, let's assume that you're right. Absolutely. That handling new things and observing new ideas, it's just completely nonsense. The joy of living a life is amazing. Serious life is, there is room to celebrate a fading dominance of that little voice questioning whether we are right or wrong. It's like picking up a recipe and using it until you reach the point where you embellish it with your own touches. Suit yourself in the way you celebrate the yearning to find the best in those around us by learning the secret. It really is important. If I told you we are taught to look for flaws and errors, would you ask if there was another lesson? Yes, yes, there is. Good question. Beginning with what we don't know, it doesn't explain what we do want. I don't want cream in my tea, so what do I want? Do I want? I tell you what I don't want. What do I want? Well, it's obvious I don't want cream. You foolish. That means I want lemon. You see? We do this a lot. The lesson is as simple as that. Look for the best in a person, and you are guaranteed to find it. And they don't believe? Of course not. You need to learn to balance this, like you did when riding a bicycle without training wheels or a parent's firm grip guiding you. Look for it in others. Finding it and then considering what those discoveries are doing to your world belief, that is a journey into truth. It is terrible to discover. It's terrible if you discover something intrinsically beautiful about life. Have you and I realized the universe doesn't cloud our vision with bias? We do that happily and to our own chagrin, I think. Why is it that knowing this about oneself is self-correcting? It's hard to ignore better ideas when given choices. When we conquer our own conceits and pride, a mason finds a level of mastery he didn't have before. He influences with a glance, a presence, a state of mind. To reinforce our thinking, we turn to the many mnemonics found in ritual and the volumes of material packed into each symbol. Making excuses is unnecessary. Though it is private, we witness men approaching and then avoiding the truth. Truth is daunting, but essential when the illusion of life isn't working anymore. It breaks down. Making more of our life is a very good reason to think as a Mason. Knowing we can improve the lives of all, it's humbling and daunting. Some joy in that. That sounds like the thoughts of an old man. But is it really time that, you know, is it age that I'm talking about here? I don't think. I think it's observance. I think it's somebody speaking that has observed a little bit more or a little bit differently than me and is simply telling me, sharing. What the hell is that all about? Percy Bysshe Shelley. See, a poet that's selected for today to fill in this sense of joy of living as a Mason. Interesting man. Interesting guy. To say that he struggled would be, I think, would need some definition. He didn't struggle necessarily in the way of destitution and hunger. He was heir to rich estates that were acquired by his grandfather. And his father, you know, by comparison, his father wasn't the significant influence. It said it was his grandfather. But he was well educated, but it doesn't seem like he had a lot of drive, and how he used his education. Well, you be the judge of that, whether it was purposeful or not. Smart fellow. He went to Sydenhouse Academy and then to Eton and then from there to Oxford College, University College at Oxford. And he got into a bit of a dust up with the college he wrote an article, The Necessity of Atheism. This was a time when it didn't do that. Oh my goodness. It was in 1811. You didn't put something like that out without expecting some retaliation. Shelley, whether dilettante or simply to make a point, refused to apologize. And in those days, it was proper. If you apologized to your family, then all was good and you wouldn't be expelled. The guy had his sense of moral connection with his family, more than a little suspect, more than a little. He did end up, he was struggling as he went through life until, through happenstance. His father was forced to pay Shelley's debts and grant him an annual income. It was all provisions in the grandfather's will. So that made by that time, if you're that's how estranged you are with your son, well, it is what it is. But in May of 1816, we know that Mary Shelley and Mary and Claire went to Geneva to intercept Lord Byron. And Claire had already begun an affair with a rapacious Byron. And in this, sort of idyllic, we want to believe that it's an idyllic summer they're spending in Geneva. He composed the poems Hymn to Intellectual Beauty and Mont Blanc. And Mary began her novel, Frankenstein. Eh? Shelley's party returned to England, settled in Bath, and later in the year, Harriet drowned herself in London. That was his first wife. He left her. A Chancery Court decision declared Shelley unfit to raise the children, Ianthe and Charles, who were placed in foster care at his expense. Shelley wrote a 12-canto romance piece, Leon and Cynthia, or The Revolution of the Golden City, and Mary finished Frankenstein. And then they compiled the history of a 6 weeks tour from letters and journals of the trips to Switzerland. And in the meantime, in November, the children. In November, the work, Leon and Cintna, was suppressed by its printer and publisher, and they feared that Shelley's idealized tale of a peaceful national revolution, bloodied, suppressed by a league of king and priests, violated the laws against blasphemous libel. And after revisions, it was reissued in 1818 as the Revolt of Islam. So that's, if you're looking at that, you know that there's a backstory to it. Now, his health went deteriorated, probably because of the climate, picked up viruses and whatever, and his financial obligations outran his resources. He was, you know, living the high life, yeah. And that's just a taste of the company kept by Shelley and Byron. It was in the moment, live for the moment, express, be fearless and bold and be creative and imaginative and be in the company of others like-minded. Now, the poem that we've selected today is Ode to the West Wind. Now, to think that you're walking down the street and you pull your scarf around your neck and your hat down over your ears, and you're actually thinking about this piercing wind that's hitting you enough. You're a receptacle, aren't you? It's affecting you. What? And then you begin to write about it. What is this? Is it just this cold air mass is just drawing heat away from me? That's it? Listen to this. Oh, wild west wind, thou breath of autumn's being, thou from whose unseen presence the leaves dead are driven, like ghosts from an enchanter fleeing. Whoa. Would you read that again there, Percy? And by the way, would you mind getting me another drink? Black and yellow and pale and hectic red, pestilence-stricken multitudes. O thou who chariotest to their dark wintry bed. Winter, eh? The winged seeds where they lie cold and low, each like a corpse within its grave, until thine azure sister of the spring shall blow. Her clarion o'er the dreaming earth and fill, driving sweet buds like flocks to feed in air, with living hues and odors, plain and hill, wild spirit, which art moving everywhere, destroyer and preserver. Hero. Make me thy lyre. You know that nice instrument, lyre? Make me thy lyre. He's talking to the wind. Even as the forest is, what if my leaves are falling like its own? The tumult of thy mighty harmonies will take from both a deep autumnal tone. Sweet though in sadness, though spirit fierce, my spirit, be thou me, impetuous one. Drive my dead thoughts over the universe like withered leaves to quicken a new birth. And in the incantation of this verse, scatter as from an unextinguished hearth, ashes and sparks, my words among mankind. Be through thy lips an awakened earth, the trumpet of a prophecy. O wind! If winter comes, can spring be far behind? Did he invoke the wild west wind of autumn? Speaker says if he were a dead leaf that the wind could bear, or a cloud it could carry, or a wave it could push, or even if he were, as a boy, comrade of the winds wandering over heaven, then he would never have needed to pray to the wind and invoke its powers. He pleads with the wind to lift him as a wave, a leaf, a cloud, for though he is like the wind at heart, untamable and proud, he is now chained and bowed by the weight of his hours upon the earth. Ooh. That was recorded live the 17th of December, 1972, in Paris, France. Bill Evans, beautiful piece, beautiful work. It seems our intrepid historian, Margaret Jacobs, really needs to address this matter of women in Freemasonry, in Masonic lodges, co-masonry. And we see the she's been reaching for the highlights all this time. We speak to now speak we look today at her work on an oration, and she claims that it attempted to answer the question that survived for in a very rare songbook dedicated to the sisters of the fraternity spread over the surface of the earth. It's a poem. It's a song. Aside from songs and melodies composed by two brothers of this particular lodge in Holland, the songbook published a preliminary discourse delivered by Saint-Étienne, a deputy master of the lodge. And here, and this is her point, he speaks to his brothers to convince them of the value of the new lodge of adoption. The passions, in particular vanity, ambition, and self-regard, he proclaims, have taken hold in the heart of men, and these are moderated only by the sciences. The passions have produced in various nations a profound ignorance, and then blindness has prevented thousands of men from seeing that women, quote, have been formed to be men's faithful companions, sharing in the happiness, the pleasures of their actions. Women are, end quote, one of the most beautiful ornaments in the order of nature's perfections. Where do you begin to unpack that? Eh? The orator likens this widespread ignorance to that found in Plato's cave. Remember the shadows and the illusion and reality? As a result of this perpetuation for many centuries, Masons would not admit their wives to their lodges. This ignorance, he continues, must be dispelled, not just in faraway places where Masons may be found, but rather in their republic. This lodge is the polity where a small group of citizens have escaped ignorance, and they are distinguished and known under the name of Masons, perfect friends, faithful compatriots, and guardians of a temple of virtue and truth. By admitting women, these men alone, by their wise discretion, in the practice of their labors, have maintained the deference and affection which is due to the perfect companion of man. The metaphors are traditional. Women are helpmates to men. But the message goes one step further. Saint-Étienne manages a rhetorical exist from the gender exclusivity of the traditional lodges by proclaiming that the light has finally dispelled the darkness. Our profound study in the art of masonry has enabled us to find a true method of perfecting our building. It is by the assistance of our sisters. With them, he proclaims, we shall build the school of manners, the temple of virtue. And by 1751, as a result of the Orangist Revolution of 1747 and 48, Freemasonry in the public had surfaced from under the weight of the prohibition placed on it by the States of Holland in 1735. The reformers of 1751, it would seem, now wanted to enlist women into their temples of virtue. The effort to include women, as we shall see, failed in the Republic, as in many other European countries. We can only imagine that the universal enactment of this fantasy might have created. Mm-hmm. Well, I begin to see that our time together is drawing to a close temporarily. We can read and study the history of Masonry. It's really a history that Masons are partaking in. To claim that it's a Masonic history, it's another matter, another level of thinking. But it brings to mind this idea that these same questions are with us today. What to do? And within our own ranks, we have members that will refer to us as misogynistic. I don't know if we can correct, if people will change their mind based on what we say or claim. Most Masons that I've heard, sadly, can only offer some vulgarity. Why are there no women? And then they get vulgar about it. And, they lose their boyish charm. But today it's still important for us to realize that we are in the company. We protect and preserve the company of men because, for reasons. Now, have you studied or looked into what those reasons were back in the day? And have you examined if those same reasons prevail today in the same form? We may have the same thought, but the context could have changed, and it has, as much as our context in our lives has, in our personal lives, have changed. So change happens, but things seem to remain the same, eh? Please change. Se change la même chose, is it something like that? Here, we move on. You and I have that sense of movement. And yet these important questions, time-tested, I'd say, relegates them to the file of important questions in life, is with us. And I suspect that it's not only just that one question, but that all of the important questions predate. Let's start with the Oracle at Delphi for just as an example, and we'll ignore what was going on in China at the time and in the Middle East at the time. We'll just ignore that just because it can. Ideas. We began to work with ideas. And the questions that were answered then are so familiar. We look at the arguments that are written. They're so beautifully written. And they still teach us. They still give us vital, vital information. And that is a pivot point, in a way. A pivot point in understanding what's going on around us. So if we happen to stumble into more of these major questions, we'll continue to do that. We tried to do that for a long time on Masonic effects, but we're going to attempt to address those deeper, more important questions. Hopefully we can do it without being too crass or obvious about it. But there are some important things and how many times can you be asked, how many times ought you be asked an important question? I say only once. No. Once in life, maybe. When are you going to have the most accurate response? Maybe that last day of your life? Maybe that last breath where it'll come together? Yeah, probably. I say probably from experience. Now join me next week. We're going to be looking at maybe how do we grow if we don't try new things. It'll be a something around that, I hope. And we'll look forward to you pulling up a seat and your favorite brew and sipping away and listening to a little jazz. And not because you like it or you don't like it, it's because it's part of the Masonic effects. to expose us all to music that had not ought to exist. Didn't the white elites try to eliminate any sense of happiness in the lives of a person of color, their slaves? So we trade, we become slaves to rational thinking. Thanks for tuning in. Committing acts of random Masonic kindness is legendary. Achieve. Don't listen to me. Go and apply this to yourself. Test it. See if these ideas work for you. It's you and I are the classroom. We're the experiment to replicate this knowledge that's been passed along to us generation by generation. I look forward to sitting in with you soon. Thank you so very, very much to listeners tuning in from all over the world. It's a pleasure. Thank you.